From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 19th day of May, 2025. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's at agmarket.net. We'll turn our attention to a broader view of the landscape as it relates to trade and exports, particularly with Ben Brown. He's at the University of Missouri and with the Food and Agricultural Policy Research Institute there. And then we'll take up the weather forecast, those dust storms that took place on Friday too, as we talk about the climate with Mark Russo. He's at Everstream Analytics, and we'll do all of that on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world, online, on demand, anytime you'd like at willag.org. Our theme music is produced and performed in courtesy of Logan County, Illinois farmer Tim Gleason.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
July corn for the day settled $4.47.5. It finished four higher. September at $4.28.25, up 6.75. And December at $4.41.75, 6.25 higher. July beans, $10.50.75, 0.75 higher. August soybeans up $0.01.5 a bushel. Settlement price there at $10.47.75. And new crop November soybeans, $10.37, up 1.5 cents. The bean meal, 80 cents lower. The bean oil, 51 cents higher. Wheat futures, July, up 4 cents in the soft red harvest month at 529. The hard red July at 522.75 a bushel, up 6.25 cents for the wheat. Live cattle futures at 207, 92.5, up $1.17.5. Feeders at 297, 47.5, a settlement price, 12.5 cents lower. And lean hogs down 60 cents today at $103.57.5 per 100 pounds in the July contract. Crude oil, $72.22 a barrel, up 25 cents. Diesel fuel about a penny lower for the day at 209.1 cents per gallon. That's diesel fuel, or U.S. low-sulfur diesel out of New York. And then the gasoline on the wholesale price at $2.09.2, just about unchanged for the day. Here to talk about these numbers is Kurt Kimmel. He's with agmarket.net. Thank you for being with us again on Monday. Kurt, well, you've been watching closely in the marketplace.
Well, we had some giddy up earlier this morning, and hopefully this trend will continue. I kind of like Mondays here with their markets, make Mondays great again in the marketplace. But combination of things, Todd, I think part of it was Saudi Arabia coming in, buying 621,000 option origin wheat. And with the presidential tour of the Middle East there, maybe we got a little sign going here. We're starting to develop some relationships here. And that kind of helped the wheat have some strength early. But that kind of fizzed out during the day, but it was manageable to see it close anywhere from 3 to 6 cents higher. But the ongoing moisture situation, particularly in the southern third of the growing region here, just continues to one system after another. I didn't get a visit with a whole lot of people today, but I know last week visited with quite a few producers that still has quite a bit of seed still in the shed and kind of waiting, trying to get a window here to go. It's just not happening. But as a nation, we're scooting quite along here nicely. This afternoon, in progress expected to show 78% of the corn crop in the ground versus 62% last week and about 70% a year ago. Bean progress, 64%. They're looking from anywhere from 61 to 70 as the range, 48% last week and about 62% a year ago. We're above the averages, but from here on out, particularly corn, we start putting corn in later. And these forecasts come true of some warmer temperatures later on here in the growing season. It could start to question whether or not we got any weather premium in the marketplace. So I think it was a function of the market here, you know, buying corn, selling beans, buying wheat, selling beans, and putting a little premium back in the marketplace. Technically, pretty good day. We held, depends which market you're looking at, we held last Friday's lows. Squeaked higher here today. If you look at some of the market technical charts in through here, we're starting to see some bullish trend divergences start to kick in here. So if we can see some follow through in here, maybe we get the momentum going higher. There is a seasonal up more research, long-term 15-year seasonal chart, if you have a chance to look at that. It shows, you know, a little bit of a low here mid-May and some strength into early June. So with the market incredibly oversold, it's probably due to have some upside momentum here. The commodity funds went from huge longs to short. They were short about 85,000 contracts of corn. They sold over 200,000 contracts here over the last week or two. And they're slightly long the soybean complex. So we'll see how things unfold in through here. But I think it's a little bit of a momentum up move here as we put a little weather premium back in the marketplace here for a day or two.
Do you have upside targets for corn and soybeans at this point?
Well, on the long term, yeah, $6 corn and probably $12 beans if the weather kicks.
Those are not the upsides I was talking about.
Oh.
Something maybe a little closer at hand.
I think near term and through here, the old crop corn demand strong. We lost a little bit on the spread here between old crop and new crop, but on this July corn, you can look for a move back to 460. New crop December, maybe back up to 450 to test that resistance there. Those are achievable. That's not that far away. Now, we start going above those levels, we can see a little bit of fireworks to the upside. On the July beans, we settled here at 1050. I imagine we get back up to this 1070 level. And new crop November beans were closed here at 1037. I imagine back towards that 1050, 1055. Those are kind of short-term upside objectives. When you look at the big picture in here, I believe volatility is going to come back into the marketplace. We got to expect some fairly wide swings as we start to factor in the political wind, which way it's blowing, and also weather, Todd.
Anything else before I let you go?
No, it's just one of these markets here where we're going to have some giddy up here as we move forward. It's going to be more and more exciting here as we get in the growing season.
Hey, thank you much. We appreciate it.
You bet. Take care.
You too. Kurt Kimmel is with AgMarket.net. Joined us on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report that comes to you from Illinois Public Media. Just a quick reminder that this Friday afternoon, if you're out of the field and you're close enough by Riggs Beer in Urbana, there will be a wheat, barley, and triticale field day hosted by University of Illinois Crop Sciences. Come join us at Riggs Beer at Friday afternoon from 3 to 6. We're now joined by Ben Brown, agricultural economist with University of Missouri, an extension there, and FAPRI, the Food and Agricultural Policy Research Institute. Hello, Ben. Thank you for being with us again on a Monday. Let's talk about the export picture for corn, soybeans, and wheat, if you'd like. How are we doing, and what are your expectations for the new crop years of each of those going forward, given the trade policies that are in limbo?
Sure, yeah. So let's go back this year. I'm going to answer your question directly, but let's go back and then to help answer the question moving forward. So, you know, probably last summer, early last fall, so somewhere in that July, August, September timeframe, I was of the opinion and had data to kind of back it up that we could see very strong corn exports for the 2024-2025, which is our old crop marketing year. And, you know, I thought that that had the opportunity to be very strong. And the reason I felt that that was the case is because when you look at all of the global corn supply, we were one of the few places in the world that had enough corn to really have a robust export program. And yes, Brazil has increased corn production this spring. They have, you know, some exportable supplies of corn, but they also use quite a bit of corn themselves, and they're going to keep a lot of that domestically for feed and even their domestic ethanol use. And so the reason I say we need to go back to then go forward is if I'm making an estimate about corn exports for next year, for the 25-26 marketing year, our new crop marketing year, I have to say I think the picture looks very similar to where I was last year in the early fall. It's setting up to where if we have good production this summer, right? And by good production, I mean, let's just call it, you know, trend line to even maybe slightly below trend line yields. I think we can still have a very robust export program. Now, where that export program really starts to taper is if we have a poor harvest here in the United States. If we whack, let's just say we shrink national average yields anywhere between, I'm going to say 6 and 10 bushels an acre, somewhere in there, then we're going to start pulling back out of our exportable supplies. We're going to keep that supply domestically. That's going to really shrink that export window. So I think on the corn side, with solid production, and it doesn't even have to be, you know, that trend line yield, we could pull back a little bit from that trend line yield and still, I think, have a pretty robust corn export picture. The reason is we have corn. The global market needs corn, and it creates this happy marriage, right? So I think that's the story, or, you know, I think that's where we could hit on the corn side. The wheat side, to stick with feed grains, I'll make this relatively simple. Wheat has struggled. Just because we've seen a lot of cheaper wheat on the global market. You know, Canada, at least right now, appears like their spring wheat crop. You know, it's early, it's very early in the season, but, you know, it appears that there's wheat that's going to compete with the U.S. wheat market, and that's going to kind of create some headwinds for us. And then on the soybean side, this is where I think the trade policy really kind of becomes a little bit more uncertain, is where we sit today. You know, a lot of people would point and say, okay, the trade policy isn't having a large impact, relatively large impact in soybean exports today. And we have to look and say, okay, well, we don't ship a lot of soybeans this time of year. We're not selling a lot of soybeans this time of year. We do have some sales on the books for that new crop 2025-26 market. However, we're still probably a couple of months away from really seeing international buyers come into the market and try to buy soybeans. And, you know, if the tariffs and if, you know, some of the trade restrictions are still front of mind and still, you know, in the market environment, you know, yes, we'll maybe see, you know, whether there's any impact from, you know, how much of an impact there is from that in terms of soybean exports. So I say all that because my understanding, or at least my perception, is a lot of market analysts don't think that we're going to be in the same trade situation 3-4 months from now that we are today. Right? It could be better, it could worse, it might be the same, but I think a lot of people think it's going to be something different than where we're at today, and that'll ultimately drive what soybean exports look like in the new marketing year.
Okay, so two things, both from the USDA numbers. We'll start with corn. They say 2.675 billion bushels of exports, which is a big number for corn. What are you using in your supply and demand table?
Yeah, I wouldn't be that far off. I'm maybe just a little bit softer still. 2.6 is where I think we could be given the expected production. Like I said, I'm maybe a little bit smaller than USDA because, you know, I'm not, at least in my personal, you know, outlook here, I'm not sure we hit those trend line yields. That's not to say we can't. It's just like, you know, it's dry enough, and we've seen some challenges with planting and just different parts and uneasiness in terms of, or, you know, variability in terms of the emergence. So still well within the possibility of a trend line yield. Don't get me wrong. It's still there. It's just like, I think we have an environment to maybe a little bit softer production that could be overshadowed with acreage, by the way. So I'm giving you all sorts of different angles here, and I'm basically saying nothing, Todd. But to answer your question exactly is, I have a little bit smaller export number for next year. However, still very large and still a very robust and strong corn export picture.
And then a number I still don't quite understand from USDA for their exports, which is the soybeans. They're for new crop at 1.815 billion bushels. By comparison, they're at what, 1.85 billion bushels for the old crop. They say they used trade policy in place, and I don't quite get that, but they've got a good number. What are you using?
Well, okay, so I would agree with you, right? Like, that is, if they are taking trade policy in place, right, that would include basically turning off, you know, U.S. soybeans into the Chinese market, right? Like, that's kind of what that signals is we just, when you add in the tariffs, we just don't compete. Now, there's a lot of shifting, and this is something people always talk about. Well, Brazil just sells beans to China. we in the United States sell our beans to other places where we can compete. And I agree that that's what happens, right? Like, we see that to some extent. But, you know, the least cost route would be that, you know, whoever's got the soybeans the cheapest at the time would sell into whatever market that fits into, right? And so if you do compare, you know, a new shuffled trade environment to, you know, the baseline with no tariffs, you know, it's probably a little bit more of an export potential for soybeans, higher value, just a little bit, right? That's what economic theory would tell us. But certainly, like, you know, we will still sell soybeans into the international markets. It just might not all be China. There'd be some shuffling and shifts around. And that's why that number is in there at what it is because you look at, you look at this global picture, a lot of soybeans on the global market, but there's still markets out there that need soybeans, and we can fill those markets or provide soybeans in those markets.
So what number are you using?
Yeah, so we wouldn't be too far. We'd be right around that 1.8. Of course,
with current trade policy, so you really are the shuffle under current trade policy is just a shuffle mostly.
You lose a little bit, right? So that's not much. Yeah, you lose much. You lose some, but not a lot. And it shuffles around to different markets. And you know, we still believe that there's going to be markets, but by believe, I mean, economically we do fit into places, even with that, you know, added 10% tariff for most places, you know, and there's some other things that go into play, not just that 10% tariff, but you know, there's some other products. Even with that, we still compete competitively into some markets that we think we can ship soybeans to.
Anything else that we should discuss for the day?
So the other thing that I would just simply say, and maybe you've already covered this, is when it comes to the soybean outlook moving forward, we've seen soybeans kind of rally in the last couple of weeks and then fall in the last couple of weeks based on expectations around biofuel. We saw the rally when there was some friendly news rumors about, you know, volume obligations for biofuel. And then when EPA sent over their proposals to the White House, you know, then we saw kind of the unraveling of the soybean oil market and in turn soybeans. And so I just remind folks that is part of this is a policy around biofuels and the expectations, not just the physical policy, but the expectations around that policy. And that's been creating a little bit of up and down here the last couple of weeks.
We'll learn more as they release more information. Thank you, Ben.
Yep, thanks, Todd.
That's Ben Brown. He's an agricultural economist with the University of Missouri Extension and FAPRI, the Food and Agricultural Policy Research Institute. Mark Russo of Everstream Analytics now joins us to take a look at the weather forecast. Hello, Mark. Thank you for being with us. Friday of last week, I was making the trip in the afternoon back from a family funeral in Lincoln, and I happened to get caught up in the dust storms. I know better. We got to McLean or 136. I was going to pull off there. They had it blocked. I went ahead and went north to Bloomington and then turned back south. So I was on Interstate 55 and then back south on 784 towards Champaign. I got to tell you, it was just a mistake. It was scary. We came to a full stop at Leroy for just a bit. I think there was an accident there. I don't think at some point, it was kind of clear by the time I got there, but we did come to full stop. But we came to full stop before that. And honestly, as we were coming out of Bloomington, but before we got to Downs, the winds had kicked the dust up and we were just coming into the dust storm. We were slowing down nicely. I happened to be in front of a semi. He wasn't paying enough attention. And as we slowed down, and it wasn't fast, he headed for the shoulder. I watched him. I wasn't sure exactly what my escape route was. It was going to be to the left into the passing lane. But man, that's just awful. Just truly awful. The conditions, I guess, were just right to make a lot of those things happen. What was it about the weather on that day that caused so easy for the dust to kick up into the air?
Yeah, well, Todd, yes, certainly a extremely rare situation. One of the primary reasons of what triggered the dust storm was actually what we call outflow boundary winds from severe thunderstorms in central Illinois. They kicked up the dust, had wind gusts over 60 miles per hour, and that all just went in a northward direction from the Bloomington area all the way northward here into the Chicago area. We got impacted by the dust to a significant extent. In fact, it was the first kind of dust storm warning issued for the Chicago area from the National Weather Service on record, and going through it myself here, a pretty unique and kind of strange situation here, being in an urban area, seeing that much dust.
Yeah, I did get the National Weather Service dust storm warning, although I was already at a full stop on the interstate when that arrived, so it was a little late, but at least a warning did come out, and you could see it. I mean, as I came up on it, I knew what was happening. I could see that. It looks, from the ground level, when it's just in the flat prairie, very much like a storm, except mm-hmm. sort of flip. So it was on the horizon as opposed to further up into the horizon. So anyway, I just really tough. Just a caution, when you see those, just avoid them. Just stop. It's not worth driving into. Okay, given that, what's this week look like for producers across the Midwest as it relates to finishing up their planting season and the work that they'll need to do to control weeds and other things going forward?
Yeah, it's looking rainier here across much of the Midwest, especially over the next 2 to 3 days. And so any lingering planting here will slow down, but then those rains will also help settle the dust in some of those areas. And but overall, it'll boost soil moisture as well for newly planted crops. As we look out beyond into next week, it does look like the southern Midwest will continue to receive rains, while the northern areas will actually begin to dry out again, or at least shift in a drier mode. The other item of note is that temperatures, much of this week into the start of next week, will be unseasonably cool. So that will slow down germination and growth. But out at the end of the two-week outlook, we do see temperatures kind of returning back to more seasonal levels.
Anything else we should cover before I let you go?
No, those are the main highlights, which again, overall, it's generally favorable for this latter portion of planting here across the vast majority of the Corn Belt.
Thank you much, Mark.
You're welcome, Todd.
Mark Russo is with Everstream Analytics. Joined us on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report that comes to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. One final note on the dust storms from Friday. Part of the reason that the dust storms were able to kick up was because the winds were coming mostly straight out of the south, blowing straight into the north. That means they were following the rows. Most farm fields are either planted east-west or north-south, so the winds were running with the rows. And during the planting season, particularly in the most recent set of years, the farm fields are prepped in a way that makes the seedbed really easy to plant. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.